Up next, Robert Stanley joins us. We're going to talk about UFOs, the Anunnaki, and all that fun stuff next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, our special guest now, Robert Stanley, the webmaster of UnicusMagazine.com, host of the Unicus Radio Hour, has served as a correspondent for America's Morning News and America's Radio News Network. Robert has traveled to nearly 60 countries during his long life pursuit of modern and ancient mysteries. And over the past 30-plus years, his quest for unique ideas and information has led him to research and write about many controversial topics as well. He's got several books out, including Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, Covert Encounters in Washington, D.C. He was last with me about almost a year and a half ago. Robert, welcome back. How are you?
Doing well, George. Nice to speak with you again.
I'm looking forward to this, too. And COVID has been friendly to you, I trust?
Yes, I'm healthy, thank God.
Yeah, absolutely. What book are you working on these days?
So I know we've talked about this off and on for years, and at this point I'm just going to call it my memoirs.
Yep.
Because I just, you know, the thing is, it's really not about me. That's why it's so difficult to write. I didn't understand half of the stuff that was happening to me in the last 30, 40 years. And so it's been a challenge to try and unravel this Gordian knot and put it down in a way that makes sense to other people, because we're all going through this. And here's the problem, too, is that the history is a bit murky, to say the least. And so decoding all that or finding the bits and pieces and putting it together has been a very difficult task. But, yes, that's what I'm working on right now, my memoirs.
There's a book out there called The Shining Ones by Christian O'Brien, Barbara J. O'Brien,
yep,
as well. And it kind of echoes a lot of things you've talked about on this program over the years about the Anunnaki. But they did a great job with that.
Yeah, Mr. O'Brien is deceased, and he had help from his wife, Barbara Joy. I've gotten to know the publisher a bit, and the foundation there in England. It seems like a lot of people in England know more about this than most people on the planet. And so last time you and I spoke, I mentioned that I realized that I was studying angelology, because that's another word for the Anunnaki, is angels or Elohim. But that's who we're dealing with. And so what we discussed was very introductory level angelology.
Mm-hmm.
The information, specifically in that book, The Shining Ones, is a far more advanced level of angelology, and it, I think, is extremely accurate. It's not 100% complete, because I'm still looking deeply into this and learning every day more and more about our relationship with these beings, and it's phenomenal.
How much do they echo, Robert, the work of Zachariah Sitchin and his work on the Anunnaki?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's similar, but a very different perspective. You're drawing on different sources, and that's what I was surprised to see. I just put it this way. Zachariah Sitchin, and you and I have talked about him a few times. His work was far more elementary, whereas I feel that Mr. O'Brien's work is far more scholarly.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And holistic. I mean, it's just like, in the sense that we know that there's a multi-dimensional aspect to all this, and that's addressed in that book, The Shining Ones, in a way that Mr. Sitchin never even delved into.
Well, Sitchin kind of touched on the ancient Sumerians and basically left it like that. I think the O'Briens got in a little deeper, didn't they?
Oh, much deeper. I mean, in fact, the cosmology, the way it's laid out in the introduction or the first 100 pages of that book, and it is voluminous. It's like 700-something pages. But the first couple hundred pages, anyway, it talks about the various realms. I guess you could call them dimensions, sort of like, or maybe even universes, but apparently it's a common thing for us to, as souls, to move through these different realms, and that would include the Anunnaki. And this is one of the reasons we call them angels or Elohim, God's angels. It's all the same thing, because they are interdimensional beings.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about the Anunnaki and get your definition, Robert, on just who they were or who they are.
Yeah, who are they? Well, they're they are, as I said, we call them so many things. We call them gods. We call them angels or Elohim. The Elohim, I guess, is God's plural. They are, and Sitchin has said that they came from heaven, from heaven to earth. They came, something like that. And that's actually true, but he said they came in rocket ships, which
from this other planet called Nibiru.
Right. And even though they have a physical component to their being, they also apparently can move to these other dimensions that are beyond our physical realm. They literally descended from a higher plane, and that's so. This is where it gets a little tricky, because they do have this aspect where we tend to think of them as godly creatures, and that's not a bad thing, but I don't think we should worship them. We do have a relationship with them, and it's been both good and bad. That's quite clear from the historical records. And at this point, I would have to say that we are about to learn a lot more about them, and they clearly know a lot about us. So I do think it's more than just an intellectual exercise that we study them or learn more about our past relationships, so that when we go into expanding, you know, the future relationship with them, we have a little bit more context.
Do you believe the Anunnaki might still be here?
Yes, I'm absolutely certain of it. And, you know, we've talked about this over the years, about my experience in Malibu. I was really perplexed about who was this being that I met. Granted, I was out of body at the time. I was having an out-of-body experience back in September of 1985 while meditating on a mountain in Malibu. I told you before that I thought it was Inky that I'd met.
Right.
And I had to amend that now. I'm quite certain that who I met and who I'm having a relationship with is his father, Anu.
You went right to the top then, didn't you?
Well, no, it's not that I want. Look, I didn't ask for this, George. It seemed to just happen to me. And again, this is what we discussed before about angelology. It's what some people call it. It's a calling. It seeks you out. The challenge for me is trying to figure out why.
I'm losing you a little bit on your phone, Robert. Let's see if we can get you in a better spot, okay?
What? Can you hear me?
I can. But you're drifting in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't moved my phone at all. Maybe the... I don't know what's controlling it here.
We're going to put you on the roof or something, huh? Well, Sitchin believed, we'll have Gina work with you at the half here. Well, but Sitchin believed that the Anunnaki seeded humans. Do you accept that?
Yeah, I do. And I think there was multiple, and they're not experiments. They knew exactly what they were doing. I guess if I had to summarize, I would say that they were, the goal is to create another civilized world on this planet, and then included in the, I guess they loosely call that a federation or association of civilized worlds. So they've been upgrading the life forms here on this planet. Unfortunately, there was a rebellion among them, and that caused a lot of issues that are still being resolved to this day. So I know it appears that they've left, but it's a major part of that is because, not because of us, it's because of them, this unresolved rebellion.
We've got a Coast guest, Michael Heiser, who does not accept Sitchin's work.
Right.
We talked about that in the past. Any further thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I understand Dr. Heiser is, you know, he looks at things from a biblical perspective, and that's fine. I tend to feel that the source material for the Bible is much older than the Bible itself. That's undisputed. So, again, this is why I feel that Mr. O'Brien, who had worked with people like Lawrence Gardner and others, to come up with a much more holistic and accurate perspective or analysis of who the Anunnaki really are and why they've been interacting with us for so long.
Truly remarkable. I mean, that they possibly could have changed the face of mankind with the coming around. Sitchin's contention was this Planet X that the Anunnaki came from comes around every 3,600 years, plays havoc with the planet, all kinds of earth changes occur, the floods, everything else.
Right.
But I've always wondered where they went. And so you believe that they stayed in some capacity.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they have. I mean, I'm not the only one that's had some sort of interaction with them. And I was listening to an old interview with Bob Dean, and he'd said that he was certain that our government knew about Planet X, as they call it.
Probably.
Or Nibiru. Yeah, and that specifically the Navy, the Naval Observatory there in Washington, D.C., is what he was referring to, that they allegedly had told Sitchin that you know, they knew it was real. And, but they couldn't just come from there. That they're obviously spread out, just like there's got to be life throughout not only this physical universe, but other universes beyond that.
Sure. Isn't it interesting, though, that the Bible talks about God making us in his own image? And that's what the Anunnaki did with us.
Okay, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, they did. And actually, the Elohim is, we know that means plural gods, but a lot of times in religious terms, they want to try and make it a singular thing. And so our souls are created by God. The physical Homo sapien at our current format, it was created by the Anunnaki. I should say it was genetically manipulated. And interbreeding, I mean, that's the other thing. We're related to them, which would explain a great deal about why they're so interested in us. And even though it's been very covert in recent times, it wasn't always that way. So, and like I said, I really feel like they're going to be, we're going to be having overt communications, relations with them again.
How did the soul get in the body, Robert?
That one I'm still trying to study, but to summarize it, and again, this is mentioned in the book, The Shining Ones. Apparently, our souls are created in the highest realm. Let's just call it heaven, because I don't know what else to call it—a realm of light that's way beyond the physical. And then we descend. We agree or choose to descend into these lower realms. So the lowest realm is the physical. And then beyond, above that is the astral, and above that is the causal plane. So just like a seed falls off of a tree and penetrates the soil and is in the dark and it struggles up towards the light, that's the best analogy I have. It's an organic process, but I feel that this is very similar to the way our souls come into these lower realms and then ascend back up. And in the process, we mature or activate our full potential. I didn't quite answer your question because I don't really know how it attaches to a physical form.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of theories about it, but I'm not sure.
That's a godly decision, I guess.
Yeah, it's above my pay grade, George.
Now, in terms of the Anunnaki, the UFOs that we continue to see and get reports on, Robert, might that be them, or are we talking about other civilizations from other planetary systems or dimensions?
I think it's all of those things. And that's one of the reasons our government, specifically our government here in the United States, is having a very difficult time at so-called disclosure, because it's very complicated. And I'm sure people could understand it. if it was presented well, but it could be very discomforting. I we've talked about this before, but I'll just give an example. What really shocked me was when I found out that they're not only watching us, that they know they can read our thoughts. And when you come to that realization, it's very unnerving. I mean, I don't really have anything to hide, but there's this level of privacy that we assume that we have, you know, especially in our own head, and then to have that revealed, I don't know that there's any, I do think it's going to cause a problem for a lot of people, let's put it this way, it's going to be an adjustment period for people to get used to the idea that mind-to-mind communication, or even possibly technology that allows for the reading of minds, which, again, it feels a bit invasive, or at the very least, very shocking.
When you wrote the book, Close Encounters on Capitol Hill, back in, was that 2006?
Yeah, the first time we spoke was December 2006.
That was a pretty compelling story, and...
Again, I didn't really set out to write that. I originally wrote an article and published some photographs, and just to say, look, this happened. I couldn't understand why nobody else was reporting it, because plenty of other media outlets and individuals had a chance at it, and they all declined. And for whatever reason, I ran with the story, which turned into the book. And then when you and I spoke for the first time, it just exploded, because this was like suddenly everybody, because this audience is so huge and so awake, even though it's in the middle of the night, you have so many awake people on this planet listening to this show, that the feedback I was getting is what compelled me to continue down that path. For something like 8 years, I wrote 2 books and 800 pages and did all these interviews. And the thing is, That activity hasn't stopped. I just stopped pursuing it because our government and the media in general is just tone deaf when it comes to talking about or disclosing that this is an ongoing situation there.
Did you ever have an opportunity to meet Zachariah Sitchin?
Yeah, at one time. I mean, here's the thing. We have a mutual friend, or we had, whatever. I know Zachariah passed away now.
Right.
We have a mutual friend that works for the government, and he gave me Zachariah's home phone number and address. So I was writing to him. We spoke on the phone. We met one time in Los Angeles at a conference.
That was at Conscious Life.
Something like that. I don't know, but I showed him an artifact that I had, and at the time I didn't realize it looked exactly like a cylinder seal from Sumeria, in that when you rolled this thing on to wet clay, it made a pattern. At the time, I didn't realize it was the belt stars of Orion and all the other implications of that, but the group, the secret society of men in Malibu, or part of the Chumash, the Native American Chumash, they were actually priests of An or Anu or Orion. So this is stuff that I have learned over decades, and I wish I could have continued my conversation with Zachariah about this, because what he said to me, he was so shocked when he saw that. He said, "You must find more of these." And I'm like, well, it was given to me as a gift. It's not like I could find more.
Exactly.
All
right, we're going to come back in a moment, Robert, and talk more. We'll take calls with you next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Robert Stanley with us. We're going to take calls with Robert next hour here on Coast to Coast. It truly is remarkable, though, how the story of the Anunnaki, when you really investigate it, Robert, echoes many of the things that are in the Bible. I can't get over the similarities.
Yes, I agree. I apologize also for my poor signal in the first half of the
Oh, that's okay.
Here, George.
That's okay. It's fixable.
Can you hear me?
Yep, sure can.
Okay, good.
Sure can.
So, yes, you're correct. It definitely, much of the stuff in the Bible is based on our relationship with both the higher ranking benevolent Anunnaki and the lower-ranking malevolent Anunnaki who started basically a civil war or a rebellion here amongst their ranks. And that's all detailed in the book. I know Sitchin touched on it, but I think it's far more in-depth in that book, The Shining Ones.
Since you've been doing this work, what got you interested in this, Robert?
Well, the experience I had in Malibu was just the beginning. As I said before, I was trying to make sense of who was this radiant, shining being that I met. Why did he say he was my father? Also, that there was he made it clear that he was somehow connected to spacecraft, what we call UFOs, and pretty soon after that, you know, he showed me that he was part of that. I started having a lot of close encounters with the craft at the same place where I had the out-of-body experience, and I was like, which is Point Magoo, actually. It's not just Malibu. If people want to look it up, it's become famous because allegedly the underwater UFO base out there.
Right.
Point Magoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just, it's been, you know, like I said, it sought me out or drew me into the field, and I've been trying to make sense of it ever since. And it's such a deep, the data is just so complex and so deep that I just keep wanting to learn more. And also sharing it with other people is a passion because it's not just about me. It's about all of us. We're all in this, really.
Wasn't there an ancient battle between the Anunnaki?
Okay, that's theoretical. But yeah, it's an ongoing problem. There was a rebellion, and I guess you could call it a bit of a battle. Look, the way that Sitchin portrayed it was that the higher-ranking Anunnaki were fighting amongst themselves. Let's just call them royalty because it is a hierarchical system, the way I understand it. But after reading the work of Mr. O'Brien in that book, The Shining Ones, I came to a different understanding, is that the lower-ranking ones were punished by their superiors for not following orders. And so they've been stuck here for a long time. And they've been writing things and saying things that are basically untrue, and because they don't want to take responsibility for their actions, like most people that are considered criminals, they always try to deflect blame. So I think that's where a big schism has formed in our understanding of, you know, the different, it's not like there's different factions. It's one society, which we are part of. That's the weirdest thing, George. How could we be part of a society like that and not fully understand it?
Is it conceivable that this battle between the Anunnaki was also what Genesis talks about, the battle between the fallen angels and God?
Yes, exactly. And that's what you and I discussed last time we spoke. Yes, the fallen angels are the lower-ranking Anunnaki who rebelled against their superiors. Now, they were supposed to, the assignment was to take care of us, the newly created Homo sapien was supposed to be the lowest. So if you have the top, and then the middle and the lowest ranking, we would have been the fourth tier of their society. But instead of taking care of us, they basically took us down a path of really darkness, which is they gave us weapons of war and showed us how to use it. And they even gave us pharmacopoeia, among other things, and which, I guess by itself, it's, you know, on one hand, it has a good purpose, but it can also be abused. So this is where the whole concept of evil came into the picture, is that they basically gave us their bad behavior really influenced us dramatically, because they were supposed to be taking care of us. They saw us as supposed to be their servants instead of just another part of the entire society. And we went down a very dark path, all of us, because of that. But it's being corrected. And I know that sounds strange. You know, you look at the world, you think, God, it's really messed up. How could they be doing anything to help us? And my contention is they're doing it in a way that is very subtle and also but respectful of our sovereignty as souls. In other words, our free will is not being violated. They're giving us the opportunity to make chances to make better choices. But it's okay. So the last time I spoke to you, I told you that the Shining Ones, the Angels of Light, had asked me to ask everyone that I reached through, you know, radio and other forms,
right,
to ask the Angels of Light to assist us in dealing with the angels, the fallen angels, the angels of darkness, because if they don't have our permission, the amount of assistance that they can give is limited, because they won't violate, they cannot violate our free will. And more importantly, many of us here have been, for many lifetimes, have been working for the fallen ones, whether we know it or not. The entire system of this world has been corrupted by them, these fallen ones. And they have some advantages over us still, but the benevolent ones, the shining angels of light, are never going to give up on this thing. Obviously, they want to resolve it because we're all family.
Which of the Anunnaki would be considered Satan?
Okay. Wow. This, again, is also addressed in the book, The Shining Ones. Satan is not one of the Anunnaki. Some of the fallen ones are serving Satan. Now, that term, that word, just literally means adversary, the adversary. And he is a very high-ranking individual within the lower realms. You could say he is the head administrator of all the lower realms. And, George, I used to think, and you and I have talked about this over the years, that there was something went wrong. I thought there was an infection or something that had happened to us spiritually. But now I'm at the point, and I'm very grateful to have this awareness. All the lower realms were not just permitted, but they were mandated. They were created by God. So even Satan, the adversary, was created by God for a purpose. And the analogy I can offer, it's not the best, but it's the only one I can think of, is that this is a classroom. All the lower realms are really classrooms for us, for souls. And, you know, when we go to school, what's the purpose? It is to solve problems. And in the process, we become smarter. And it's not pleasant, you know. I mean, it's really not to be tested like that. But ultimately, that's how we graduate to higher and higher levels of understanding. And that's the same is true here within these lower realms. We are being tested individually and collectively. So the opportunities, I should say, the obstacles that we're presented with are actually opportunities for us to grow as souls.
This is pretty remarkable how all this seems to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it as a broader picture, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Well, that's the only way it makes sense, George, is that you got to step back and see the big picture. And again, part of the obstacle or the challenge is to do what you just said, because we're basically being programmed to simply follow orders or regurgitate, you know, whatever the current narrative is, whether it be religious or political or both. And we're so much more than that. And it's one of the reasons I've been so passionate about doing this kind of work, you know, is sharing whatever I'm learning with people that are interested in this, because, again, our full potential has yet to be realized. And we really are part of the Anunnaki society. So we, George, are in a position to transfigure and become shining ones ourselves.
Why don't they step in, Robert, eradicate COVID, stop wars? Why don't they do those things?
Well, okay. They have intervened. The good guys, the benevolent ones, have intervened more than once, sometimes very severely, by incarcerating the fallen ones, punishing them severely, and actually having to eradicate pretty much all of humanity, because we've been so badly tainted by and just distorted to the point where, you know, the original intent was gone. That's why, you know, and we loosely call it the flood of Noah, or Noah's flood.
Right.
But it was way more complicated than that, and that was a police action. And, it, you know, I mean, of course, most people in this audience have read Sitchin's version of it, but unless you read that book, The Shining Ones, by Christian O'Brien, you're not going to have a more broader understanding of how complicated and how sorrowful this all is, because all this nonsense, all this corruption and cruelty and stuff, and illnesses, that it was never intended to be that way by the higher ranking Anunnaki, the angels of light, the shining ones. They want the best for us, like any parents. They really do want, even though, you know, we're still new to the society. Obviously, we're family, and they want us to grow up to be productive citizens and or souls within creation. It's really quite astonishing.
It's dramatic.
And traumatic. It's been very traumatic. But then again, you know, everything about life is a challenge. And if we rise to the occasion individually and collectively, George, we will become a civilized world of multidimensional, highly aware, highly evolved beings. Now, I don't know how long that's going to take, but I'm sure that the benevolent ones, the shining ones, will never give up, because it's part of who they are. It's what they do. It's why we're here. And this is not a small thing. I mean, really, when we're triggered at some point, and I know it's already happened to some people individually, but I mean, if there's a massive collective awakening and transformation, some people call it the ascension or the great, they call it the great awakening, but it's more than just a mental thing. It's a spiritual thing where our bodies literally will transfigure from our current state to a higher state, and hence the name the Shining Ones, because they literally radiate light.
How did Christian O'Brien, the late Christian O'Brien, get involved in all of this?
I'm still trying to figure that out, but I think...
Because he ran an oil company for a while, didn't he?
He was a geologist. He worked for an oil company. He was a geologist. So, I'm sure that he had an association with people like Lawrence Gardner, who told him enough to get him interested in learning as much as possible, and then collating it all, digesting it, and writing it, and reporting it. And here's what the publisher in England, I'm blanking on his name right now, but he told me that the works of Mr. O'Brien were rejected by academia and media back in the 80s when he first started publishing. Mainly because I think that Mr. Sitchin had already gotten to the, you know, into the public arena, and most people already had read it and felt that he was the most informative or accurate. So it's like Mr. O'Brien was left out in some ways,
yeah.
And a lot of his books languished, and then only recently were they republished. So if people want to read those books, I recommend you go to my website and link directly to the publisher. For whatever reason, I just feel compelled to give people access, because I've seen those books. I mean, you can get them as PDFs, but I've seen the print books on Amazon going for ridiculous amounts of money, and it's just a waste. It's a waste of money. So I'm not trying to sell the books. I'm just making them available for people who want them.
It's crazy what some of these prices are, though, these days, isn't it?
But I just feel that this is so important. This is why I've been promoting it and also digesting it. I've been reporting it through my radio show and the website, and also interviews like this, I think are helpful, very helpful to get the word out, because, like I said, this is not just intellectual exercise. We need to prepare ourselves to continue the relationship in a way that's, I mean, ultimately, the best way is to talk directly with the Anunnaki. And it's not, they're not a monolithic group. Obviously, there's different levels.
Are they dealing with governments now?
I'm sure they are. They would have to be. We wouldn't even have, my understanding is we wouldn't have any, our governments as we know it, if it wasn't for them. We're emulating them, George, sometimes very well and sometimes not very well. And also it's because they have both good and evil among their ranks, so do we. We are created in their image, both good and bad.
Well, I got to tell you, your work, Robert, is just tremendously important. If you had an opportunity to talk to an Anunnaki, what's the first question you'd ask him?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I have had an opportunity. I didn't know I was dealing with the Anunnaki. Here's the thing. It's so covert. Again, because of this ongoing conflict that they're having internally, it's affecting us and our ability to communicate with them openly. I mean, why would I have a covert relationship with? I tried to figure this out, George. Why wouldn't Anu just tell me, "Hey, I'm Anu, and you know, you're my son, and so is all these other, you know, you're part of my family." Well, the answer is because it's dangerous.
For who? You or them?
Well, for me.
Stay with us, Robert. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and pick this up and take some calls next on Coast to Coast AM.